to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. This week on Minority Corner,
what do we have for episode 131?
We're going to the amusement park pass.
Fuck yes. Oh, it must be summertime with Miss Frizzle.
I know. Everybody needs to board onto this bus because we're going to visit some amusement parks that were black owned.
Yes.
See what they offered, what they were about, where they ended up, and just get that cotton candy smell, hot dogs, and sunshine ready for some fun.
Fuck yes. Can I say that?
Yes, you can.
Okay, good. Fuck yes.
What are you talking about?
I was talking about gaslighting. I've realized I'm being gaslit and I don't like it. And so I'm going to give you some tips to realize when you're being gaslit and how to deal with it. Especially underneath this current administration who are pros at it. So I'm going to give you a little gaslighting toolkit on how to prepare and protect yourself.
I'm into it, I'm ready for it, and I need it right now. So should we go?
Let's do it, girl.
Okay.
My lady.
Yes, hello, sir.
Lady Neke. Is that what they call you? Is that what the kids call you?
That's my formal name. That's what librarians are called instead of Mr. and Mrs. Whatever.
It's lady or sir.
Like,
okay, that makes complete sense. Because when you're filling out the form to take an airplane, there's like a online form that you do.
Yeah, instead of no Mr., no Ms., no Mrs., it's lady.
Lady, yeah. Okay, that's great. Now, how do you feel when someone uses your term lady in a derogatory way? Like, you mean like, you know like how like there's like the different levels of like, I feel like most time when someone's like, that lady over there, they're like, listen, lady. And like, how do you
know? I don't know if we're joking or not, but honestly, I really kind of like the term lady.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I think it's gotten a bad rap over a while because, like, I feel like there's different like levels where people are like, ma'am, I need you to move. Yeah. Listen, lady. Like, it elevates. Yeah. It goes from, like, ma'am. And there was a time when, like, being a lady was, like, you know, in England, like, they have, or, like, the librarian ladies of today.
Yeah.
don't want to discount them.
I like laddie now. I'm, like, picking it up for men. Even if somebody was, like, listen, lady, to me, then I would be like, that's polite. Lady over a listen bitch.
True. But interesting, that's like the next level. You know, it goes from ma'am to lady to bitch.
Yeah. Where's ho fit in that lineup?
Oh, I feel like maybe that's interesting. I think I think here's the order. I think and it goes ma'am, lady, ho.
Okay.
Bitch.
Yes, I like that. Yeah. And it does, and the bitch sounds like the aside. And I'm thinking in terms of men, it would be sir.
Mm-hmm. Sir.
But what's...
Sir, I need you to... Sir, please stop,
but
sir.
But then it escalates to dick, I feel like.
You're being a dick. Yeah, I mean, there's like... It's just 0 to 60.
I know.
0 to 60. There's no in between. There's no equivalent, you know.
There's no...
I guess
like,
maybe it'd be like, mister... But that's like, mister, please.
excuse me, mister.
Like a 1920s orphan selling newspapers? You never? Well, Aneka, you've not lived. I've had a hard knock life. I come from the suburbs of Fairfield, California. And
that's a tough spot. It's rough.
We run
there.
Around. Excuse me, mister. Spare a quarter for the bus? Or so
the
I can
suburbs?
Watch the... So I can watch the Nickel Theater?
How old are you again?
I am not like revealing my age. I am not revealing my age.
Could as be a gentleman's 100 best. The way you're talking about Nickel Theaters.
I have lived some days.
How was the Battle of the Bulge? You look great.
Yeah, it was a tumultuous time. That's next week's corner. I'm going to do a little I'm going to read my diary entries. We weren't allowed to call it journals
Ken
at the time.
You were featured, weren't you? In the Ken Burns.
I gave him the idea of how to, like, move it around the screen, the little things,
Dear Samantha, I am graciously awaiting.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, he he stole some of my diary entries, and I was like, don't you read these? And they put them in there anyways.
They did. Rude. Yeah.
We legally weren't allowed to call it a journal at the time because it was depression, and diaries were more lively, and we were trying to rebuild America.
It was a part of the New Deal.
It was literally the second clause, thou shalt not write in a journal but a diary for the sake of the American people.
Uplift. So wait, you did some uplifting this weekend.
Yes, you know what? I was doing some uplifting. I think you know this, but for those of you who don't know, I am actually an official minister. I have been ordained by the Universal Life Church, and it's the same one that Lady Gaga is also a ordained minister through.
Co-workers?
We are colleagues. Yes. In the ministries of love. Yes. I'll see you at the conference, you know.
Our
friends of ours from college we're getting hitched. And
which is so sweet. I love it. It makes my heart warm.
Yeah, when they asked me to officiate their wedding, and of course I said yes.
I mean, if you turned them down, I'd be like, what's going on, James? Are you okay? Can you blink twice? Blink three times.
There was a wedding that someone did ask me to officiate, and I luckily had a show and I couldn't do it. I was too... I wasn't ready. I wasn't emotionally, mentally ready, because I feel like it was too much pressure. I was like, I don't want to fuck up their special day. But now I feel like it's interesting. I feel like I know how to be a minister of love. Like, I've been on the spiritual path, and I have all these different spiritual leaders that, like Marianne Williamson, that I talk about a lot on the show. And I was like, fuck yeah, I will totally do this. And I've been practicing my stand-up comedy.
Yeah, you have been, you know what? I feel like you have done the ascension of wedding entertainment. You were an MC at a wedding.
That's right, last year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now you have risen to the occasion to now be the officiant.
You're so right. I felt ready. I felt like I was being called to do this. So I actually, I'm an official minister, and it's crazy. So New York City, you have to actually go down to the courthouse and fill
shit,
all this.
Oh, shit, really?
Oh, yeah. It's not just
click a button. It's just like you print it out after.
Nope. I had to go down to the courthouse. I had to sign I had to wait my turn. You know, bureaucracy. My God. I was down at the courthouse, brought a book.
I would have been like, sorry, can't do it. I have to go somewhere to get a form.
This paperwork. No. I had to sign a book of ministers. It's this huge, big ass ledger of a book, like heavy. She puts it down on the counter. Wow. Boom. And I signed this book of ministers. Yeah. And then everyone at the courthouse, going to the courthouse is crazy because, like, everyone's getting married and, like, it's a very interesting vibe there. Ooh. And everyone's taking pictures in front of this fake backdrop of like, oh, we're getting married. I just took one of me holding up my certificate.
You know, that's
just me. Like, I did it. And you know, while I was there,
it's your graduation picture.
This Israeli couple came up to me and they were we're here visiting. Would you mind being the witness at our wedding?
So, hell yeah, fun.
And I'm like, sure. I'm, you know, getting to the marriage game. It's like, hung out with them, talked to them, witnessed their wedding or whatnot. And then
that's so nice.
And then so the day of the wedding, we're in Central Park and we're getting set up. But I'm in a little private nook area because I'm, you know, going over my little spiel and want to make sure I'm, you know, running it, doing it right.
Quiet moment.
This couple comes over and they're like, oh, are you the officiant of the wedding? And I was like, yeah. They're like, oh, well, we're looking to get married here in Central Park too. But, you know, this nook, it's too small. We have 80 of us. And then I was like, they're like, well, we want the whole family to come. And I'm like, they're like, well, we're not too sure. I'm like, well, you do know that, you know, weddings, it's an opportunity to bring the families together so they can help support your love and be there
all
to
right,
bless
Reverend
it as
James,
well.
What is
And they were like, whoa, you're really good. They were like, do you have a card? And I was like, yeah. And so I gave them my card. I was like, I'm also an actor. And
then I was like, you got cards? Well, I have a business.
I'm going full in. And so I gave them my card, and then they were walking. They were like, well, but could you also pretend to be a rabbi? And then the husband was like, of course you can. He's an actor. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll learn the part.
This is ridiculous. One, this story... This couple is bold.
Because I have a side hustle now.
I wouldn't
now.
Be just walking and I see a wedding. I wouldn't walk over to the officiant and be like, excuse me, are you officiating this wedding? Can I talk to you about it? I know you got to prepare for this wedding that's coming up, but you're just over there. You're clearly about to go marry these people. But me, beforehand, what about my wedding? Let's talk about my 80 guests.
It's, my 80 guests in New York. Oh, can I show you what I got as part of the Universal Life Church? I have power, and I'll tell you this. I don't do well with power. Lord, keep me humble.
Keep
me humble, okay? Because I got a badge that says clergy on it, and everyone who
I saw you wearing that in the Instagram picture, and I was like, "What is this?"
And everyone
what
I was
is
walking,
this badge
everyone
that says
I was walking, I didn't wear it during the ceremony, but I did wear it walking around that park.
I know you did.
You know I love a badge.
And
everybody who would walk by me when I was, especially when we're at the brunch at the boathouse, we went to this really fancy like boathouse place around Central Park for brunch, and everybody's eyes would just go to like my badge. So I'm wearing this nice tux, and they're like, "Oh, clergy," you know.
Let me also explain to the audience who can't see this badge right now. It is glossy black with gold lettering, and of course, clergy is written in Old English. And you know, you gotta take anything written in Old English
seriously.
Yes,
it's a shield. It's like an emblem shield.
Yeah, with
leaves,
laurel, whatever around it.
But I will say, it was such an amazing day of like I had such a full day of just love, because I told you this earlier. Afterwards, I then went and volunteered at the LGBT homeless shelter.
Just spreading that word, doing good deeds, social work. I love
doing the Lord's work here. Yes. And it just felt like, you know what? And I am about to go into my you know, I'm turning 33. It's my Jesus year. And I've been on this spiritual.
The light is on you. I can't handle this.
Over the past year, I've been really talking about love, and I really want to be a huge champion of love, and I was so grateful to be a part of this experience. And you get to give such a gift to that couple,
sweet.
Oh my God, during it, like, because there are our friends, and they're staring at me about to cry as like I'm talking about love and like what this what they're about to go on and embark on, and then I almost start crying, and I'm like, nope. I gotta hold this together. I can't
Suck
be the guy.
Suck that tear back up in your eye.
And our friend, the groom, he's like, I saw that exact moment. The exact moment where the tear went whoop, back in. It's like, I can't be the one. I gotta move this train along.
You gotta be strong for the couple. You are
the
now
conductor.
A clergy member.
But you know, I will say this. I talked about this in the ceremony. You know, you and anybody who's out there in a relationship, and you are happily married, and I have to just commend you. And I. Because you have to look at this like I think that it's such like love is such a whatever you want to call it, a miracle, a blessing, like a happy circumstance.
Emotion.
Like, but just like for two people to come together, you have to think about this. There's a 1/1,000,000,000th of a chance of you ever being born. 1/1,000,000,000th of a chance.
It's crazy.
And you think about all the circumstances that had to have happened for your parents to have been born, and their parents and their parents and their parents have been born, and for you to have been in the right place at the right time, and to
have been a period.
You could have been a period. And then even like meeting that person, and then, you know, meeting that person and then being like emotionally ready at that same time, and to be able
it's
to
so
deal with their good and bad and the ugly and your own good, bad and ugly that comes up. Like it's an amazing thing. And so I feel so grateful to be able to be a champion of that.
I completely agree with you. And I'm so glad that you highlight that, because it's really kind of a sliding doors effect where it's like, you know, I think about, you know, the relationships that I have, and like also like the one that I have with Andrew, where, you know, our commitment that we made to each other, like there are times in my past where we would have not been a match. And the fact that we met when we did and what we're going through now. And then also, it doesn't end after you get married. Like you got to continue, you got to keep, you got to fight, you got to love, you got to do what you got to do to keep your partnerships up. So it truly is a special thing. I'm very glad to have, now that I know a religious professional,
yeah. Do you need a blessing? What do you need?
Maybe,
what do you?
I don't know.
Just call me. Beat me up. Yeah. Right. Well, and I also think that, you know, these relationships, like, relationships are assignments, and I think like the purpose of them is you now will come together to do even greater work than what you could have done alone. You know, and you.
That's good.
You know, right? Mm-hmm. So, and for those of us who are also like myself, who are, you know, single, and but you know, maybe that's my new. But maybe that's my new thing. Maybe I'm just, you know, married to being a minister of love now. Maybe that's my new calling. Mm-hmm. Well, my lady, shall we get into the corner?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
All right, lady librarian. I don't know why I said it like that.
I don't know. It sounded good.
Okay.
I love it.
Good stuff.
Every time.
Well, I hope that you're enjoying this podcast you're listening to as much as we are pretending to. But anyway, why not listen to another podcast too? It's called The Flophouse.
And on our podcast, we have recently watched a movie, often a bad movie, and we review it on our podcast, but mainly talk about other stuff and, I don't know, hang out.
It's all about hanging out, feeling like you're being with your best friends. Who are your best friends? Us three. Dan McCoy, Emmy Award-winning writer for The Daily Show, Stuart Wellington, owner of the best bar in Brooklyn, Hinterlands, and Elliot Kalin, former Emmy-winning head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, former head writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, so many things. Author of the upcoming children's book,
All right, that's enough.
The Elliot's credits just go on and on.
Yeah, but if you like the idea of listening to three funny guys talk about bad movies, then why not come over and listen to The Flophouse? It's available at MaximumFun.org or wherever fine podcasts are found.
So get out of here.
Woo! It's my corner.
Ooh. Are we going on a ride? I want to get my hands in the air and just start screaming now.
Yeah, there's a reason why you're feeling the need to go on an amusement park ride, right?
Yeah, there is. Where are you taking us?
Because, like, sun's out, buns out, it's summertime.
Is that a saying?
Sun's out, buns out?
I had no idea. I am learning, laughing, and playing.
Good.
I did not know.
Well, now you can use it. It's
Sun's out, buns out. So in the summertime, I want to make sure I'm doing these summer traditions. You know, I'm old. So
I mean, I'm older
traditions
than
have
you,
changed.
So.
But apparently I'm 100,
oh, yeah, that's
as
right,
someone said.
Penny.
Rewind the tape. Rewind the tape.
Candy or whatever.
It was a nickel theater. It was a penny candy. That's crazy. It was at least 2 cents.
You're not that old. Inflation.
Yeah, but inflation happened. So in the summertime, I put my buns out.
Suns out, buns out. I mean,
are we talking about butt?
Or your hot cross buns. Maybe your honey buns if you want to warm them in the sun.
Oh.
Your convection order. What?
And you know what? One a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns.
Yes. Okay, so moving on. So it's summertime. You want to go to amusement parks. Here in the Bay Area, one of the popular ones was Great America.
Yeah, it was. And then they had Six Flags Marine World, where it used to be those poor animals.
Africa, USA. World, Africa.
It used to be Marine World, Africa, USA. And then people were like, stop going to see the animals. They're like, well, you know what we'll do? We'll add rides because it's the late 90s extreme. Poor animals have like these giant roller coasters running over them.
I am glad that the animal portion has been minimized, but as a kid, I was so sad because do you remember the song Marine World Africa USA, which is the longest name for an amusement park in
but
the
I was like, but you had to say it all, we're going to Marine World Africa USA.
I know.
And I loved it because it was one of the few things growing up that Africa was put into a positive light.
Exactly.
I was gonna say it.
I'm gonna say that Africa part. I don't know why we had to say USA at the end, though.
Just in case, you know what, because you know what, they didn't want to go they didn't want it, you know, and it's probably some, you know, they didn't want it going too far. They're like, and just as a reminder, you're still in the USA, Africa, Marine World,
USA.
Just so we don't forget. Yeah, we know, Debbie. I don't know.
Okay, so because of all of this stuff, I started thinking, I'm in the summer mood. I'm just like, yes, it's sunny outside. I love amusement parks. I've always wondered who owns amusement parks. Like, who's owning these amusement parks, right?
Yeah.
Like, Disneyland is easy because Walt Disney put his name up on it. He was like,
yeah,
it's Disneyland, which is smart.
Yeah.
But, like, I
put your name on it.
Yeah. So I started researching some of this stuff, and here's a little fact for you to get you primed and ready.
Ooh, prime me, baby.
Who owns Legoland?
George Lego.
No.
Legolas.
Who is that from? From Lord of the Rings? Is that?
Yes.
Is that elf?
It's that elf, yeah. Which makes sense. Elves love Legos. I mean, only an elf could create a Lego. It's so magical and mystical.
It's actually owned by this British-based company called Merlin Entertainment.
I was close with the mystical because you threw Merlin into it. I was not far off.
Surprisingly close. But it's crazy because Legos are actually a company that's based out of Holland, I think. I could be wrong, but I want to say somewhere like that. But the fact that Legoland is owned by a British-based company and Legoland is in America, it's just confusing, right?
Yeah, I'm confused.
Yeah, so... me being a black woman, I am always looking to see, like, who's owning who, who's at the top, who has access. And I'm usually like, it's white people, white guys, right? But I started to kind of look around in amusement parks to see if black people owned amusement parks. And I couldn't find anything for recents, which is a little depressing. So I'm going to take you guys and you, James, on a journey through the history of a few black-owned amusement parks of the past.
What? And where are they now?
I'll tell you where each of them ends up.
Okay.
Several different ways they ended up.
But
they
interesting.
Are like the most... I tell you, when I went down a rabbit hole, it is like some fascinating stuff. I'm going to like paint you a picture. And I am pulling a lot of facts from several different sources. One called Black Then, Black America Web, which those are two websites that are kind of janky, but this is the most that I can find. Washington Post I pulled from. I pulled from like some informational pages, Ad Age, stuff like that. So there's some good sources, there's some bad sources, but generally just an information just to kind of get you primed on what black people of the past did for fun.
I feel like this is our annual summer trip. Beep, beep. Miss Frizzle is parking up. Get on the bus, kids. We're going on a summer trip.
To the past. Yeah. Okay. So, and also, I really want to emphasize the fact that ownership of minorities and women, they will give access to other groups. That's usually why ownership... having it start at the top is usually going to open doors for people in roles that are further down the chain, if that makes sense. Like, if you have a black CEO, they're more likely to hire black people, and then therefore more likely to hire other minorities. If you know what I mean? Unless you're Peter Thiel, who is a creep.
Wait, who? Peter Thiel?
Peter Thiel, he is...
Oh, yeah. That guy. Oh, my God. No, okay. I know him. Yeah, we talked about him. Him on now.
So, the first place that I want to bring up is Joyland.
That sounds amazing. I want to go there right now.
Joyland. I know. So, Joyland was opened in 1923 in Chicago. And it was opened because there was a large growing number of black people in the Bronzeville neighborhood of Chicago, which is on the south side of Chicago. So basically Joyland was created to cater to their needs because, like always, black people were excluded from white only places. So
surprise,
we had to build our own shit. So Joyland offered a merry-go-round, a Venetian swing, which I don't know what that is, but it sounds sexual.
It sounds fancy.
It does.
Did you say a swing or a sling?
Swing.
Okay. Either way, sexy.
Yeah. A Ferris wheel. And
I do not like, but
you
continue.
Don't like Ferris wheels?
We've had this discussion. Remember I got stuck on one? You love a Ferris wheel. When I went to Disneyland, it was terrifying and I thought I was going to die. Yeah.
Well, no Ferris wheel for you. You can go on the merry-go-round. I love a Ferris wheel, but I've never been stuck on one.
And I love a merry-go-round, so yin and yang, here we go.
Exactly.
Compliment.
Well, I like merry-go-round, so...
You can pick one! Okay. Let me have this! You stay like in your lane for this.
You like roller coasters.
I do love roller coasters.
I'm kind of iffy on roller coasters.
Really?
There, you can have a roller coaster.
Okay. All right. And then we'll meet at the merry-go-round.
Yes. And then we'll just be happy there. Okay. So Joyland also had its own jazz band called the Joyland Jazzers.
Oh, yes.
And a dance hall.
Oh, yes. This is a great amusement park. That makes sense. Black people would be like, you want to ride them rides, and then you also want to dance.
Exactly. Which I'll get into in some of the other parks. So this park was owned and operated by black people, which is awesome. One of which was this guy named Augustus Williams, who was an attorney during the Chicago race riots of 1919. So a little bit of history.
Sounds familiar.
I'm sure. Yeah. Okay. So during this time, Joyland was one of the largest amusement parks in the United States. Even though it was only 2 acres, there just wasn't that many amusement parks. But the fact that black people were like, fuck y'all, we're going to open this nice ass spot for us and it's going to be awesome. So bad news is Joyland was only open for 2 years.
You know what? You had to be there.
Yeah,
if you missed it.
It was a comet. In the Chicago skies. The reason that it only lasted for 2 years was it was having a hard time competing with vaudeville and the growing number of jazz clubs, which they, like, the jazz clubs in the area were like, Joyland Jazzers, we want...
Don't you
take our business?
Don't you do that with your fancy merry-go-round.
We've been working for this. So they kind of, like... A little bit of sabotage with like some suing and some legal shit that happened. And then, probably some racist shit happened too.
Yeah. So, I'd imagine. But, someone probably pooped on their front lawn.
I mean, you
could
only imagine. But between the times of 1923 and 1925, Joyland was the spot to be.
And you know, I know you're going to get into this. What I think is so fascinating is I bet you at Joyland, they allowed people of all different races to go up in that park.
Well, it was mostly for black people.
But if you were like a white person,
I'm sure they wouldn't boot you out. They'd be like, why are you here? Yeah. But it would be.
I'm sure one or two white persons like went. The Rachel Dolezal at the time was showing up there.
At the time. Okay.
There's one for every generation.
You know, there's always one. So Joyland is now a parking lot for the Illinois Institute of Technology.
Oh, God. That sucks.
But you know what? Black people just are allowed you in are parking all there? Amusement parks now, so that's good.
Okay, that's true. That's the trade-off. But just know, if you're parking there, you're parking on history.
Exactly.
It's not just a parking space. Like, people used to have fun
listeners,
there.
Listeners, if you are a listener and you are currently attending the Illinois Institute for Technology, go say a prayer or a blessing to that parking lot for all the fun that was had.
Be like, thank you, merry-go-round. Yeah, thank you, jazz time jazzy jazz dancers.
Joyland Jazzers.
Yeah. Maybe put like a... We need to do like a mural or something, or put a chalk outline,
cool.
or not a chalk outline, but like a chalk
put
decoration.
A mural up. I love that.
Yeah. We'll start fundraising
So we're going to go to another park. And this one, James, hold on to your butt. Because this is.
Okay, holding
on
to it.
This one.
I better put my safety bar down before this ride gets too crazy.
Put your hands inside of the car. Say it in Spanish. I can't, but that's how they do it at Disneyland.
Okay. They do. All the languages. All
right, so, we got Sea View Beach and Amusement Park.
Oh, I love a beach and an amusement park. I love
this
it.
This is... You're going to be having a dream about this place.
Okay.
Because I was having... this place sounded awesome. Okay, so Sea View Beach and Amusement Park opened in 1944. It opened when 3 African-American professionals, with the help of this one white guy named Dudley Cooper, who, by the way, Dudley Cooper was the driving force behind the all-white park called Ocean View Park. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, anyways, sign of the times.
So he was like... Interesting. Right. He was like, let me help you over here. He saw money. Because, so did the all-white park open up first? You know what it is? It's like that guy who started, remember there was New Edition first,
and then, New
and then
on the
he ripped off, and
yep.
exactly, it's literally like that.
But
he was like, well, after that money,
okay,
yes,
so
yeah, he was like, I want black money now.
So Dudley Cooper, I'm side-eyeing you, but he did working with three black professionals. They opened up this park, which was meant to be only for black people, or coloreds only, as they say. So along with...
I have a question about that. I think talked about this before on the podcast, and I feel like I don't remember the answer that we came up with. But I just wonder, like, does that mean, like, were Asian Americans allowed into... Like, could they go to the white park?
I honestly don't know. I'm Latinos? I'm assuming if you looked anything but white. Anglo-Saxon, then you were... Because even at that time, there was, you know, when, like, Italians Irish people weren't even... So it's kind of like... It's a wishy-washy state of affairs.
Like, who's setting the bar for this, like, who gets to come in, right?
Right, exactly.
And it's really fucked up if you're like, all right, Asian Americans, you can come in, but not you black people. I mean, it's fucked up no matter what.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Only black people. Like, it's like, what was so... quote unquote wrong with us that, like, you know, like, that we weren't allowed
to... were subhuman, we were slaves, and people are still holding on to that fact where they didn't want to believe that we actually were people.
But Asian Americans get to be people.
Well, I'm not trying to come...
Oh, I know, but I'm just like...
I feel like I just want to talk about amusement parks.
It's just a weird line. I think it's just such a weird line that, like, you know...
But I also, I don't think that line actually happened, though. Like, I do feel like Asian people
were also
Latino
excluded.
People, yeah, everybody was excluded, I feel like, except for white people.
Okay.
Yeah. But I could be wrong. I also remember hearing from a friend when I was growing up whose father was Portuguese, wasn't allowed to drink from white fountains when he traveled through the South.
Okay.
And so he had to drink from black fountains. So I pretty much, I'm assuming that black people was the catch-all for everything that wasn't white.
Right. Well, that's what they said, colored, you know, they said colored fountains. It wasn't just black fountains. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right.
But that's up for debate. We can look into that too. So this basically was in, so let me get back to refocusing. So in 1944, the three black professionals and that Dudley Cooper character got together. They wanted to create this beach and amusement park for colors only, but let's just for shorthand black people because, they were able to get 21 local black businessmen to help them with funding the thing. And it opened May 30th, 1945 on the shores of Chesapeake Bay.
Ooh.
One of the owners was, and people who helped fund it, was this guy named William T. Mason, and he is said to be one of the first black millionaires in Virginia.
Wow. Hey, Uncle William, don't forget about me.
Yes. Probably not alive. But
that means my inheritance is just waiting for me.
Yeah, exactly. You need to collect that. Okay. So the park was wildly popular and featured famous musicians and artists such as Louis Armstrong and Fat Domino.
Wow.
And in 1947, Life magazine published a photo essay on Seaview Beach calling it Virginia's best known Negro resort.
Wow.
The article basically talked about the tens of thousands of tourists that would come to see View Beach each weekend. And images in Life magazine showed pictures of black people, like black professionals, dressed impeccably on the beach. Like, there's pictures in this article too that I linked where they're like wearing like cutesy like bikinis and like cool like shirts and stuff and like fashions. And then they also show them in like social engagements and like beautiful dresses and like all of that. It's really classy stuff.
This sounds amazing. And like, I also just like highlighting too, it's reminding me there was like, I mean, there's a lot of beaches that black people were not allowed to go to. So this is amazing that it's not only a beach, but it's like, it's a resort. Thriving. It is an event.
Yes.
It is a space for us to go to.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it being in Virginia, lots of families like traveling. They're like, this is where we're going for the summer. Like it's a place to go and to relax. We have a place. We've never had one before.
Exactly. Basically, it was such a society scene for like upper and middle class black people that every week this paper, The Social World, had a column that would talk about who was seen and what they were wearing at Seaview.
Wow, this was the place.
I know,
damn.
I'm telling you.
I feel like I couldn't show up there now because I'm wearing my rinky-dink bathing suit that is not fancy.
You would have to get your minister clergyman suit on before you go.
I would have to get my badge so I can get a pass. So like, oh, Minister James was there. His shorts were, well, they're you know, of the Lord, so they're okay.
Adequate. Okay, so... So the place that they took over was a former club that was a 300-foot long, two stories high, and they painted it white, and they also painted it with a red roof. So if you can imagine, a white building with a red roof is very, like standout stunning. There was a modern ballroom, and it also had 10 other rooms scattered throughout the building. Okay, so outside, they had the Starlight Plaza, an outdoor dance pavilion that was shaded by colorful umbrellas. How classy!
What? First of all, it's not just like, oh, we're going outside. We're going to go to the pavilion.
Yes,
hello.
Exactly.
A pavilion. That's how you know it's fancy.
It's so exciting. Okay, so outside of the pavilion, there is a beach, and the beach was described as a 700-foot shoreline with a gradual descent in calm waters. See you at the sea view was a popular refrain amongst locals who visited the beach.
Oh, I feel like I've heard that before.
See you at the sea view.
Okay. Just got to get a new bathing suit because I can't wear the same one that I wore last week. Otherwise, Samantha's going to laugh at me.
Yeah, you can't have Samantha laughing at you. Mm. So the phrase was often repeated in that same social world column, too. So it was like a thing. Huh? Okay, so they had weekly events that attracted hundreds of people. In 1945, over 700 people attended a sports, dance, and cocktail party held for the sweethearts and wives of the Seamen's Club.
Well, I almost want this to be like a TV series called See You at the Sea View, you know?
I would watch it. Like, can you imagine 1940s just classy black people?
Yes.
Like, we never get classy black people in 40s-themed movies.
And also, like, at the summer, having a beach party, like, or a beach party movie with just black people would be an amazing, a musical. Oh, that
costumes
would be so good.
Costumes would be beautiful. This needs to be this could be everything.
Yeah.
So a little bit more about this place, because I just was so fascinated by this place. So yeah. I kind of took a lot of notes. So one of the most popular events was the Miss Seaview Beach Contest and the Miss Tidewater Contest. And both attracted crowds over 1,000. Yeah. In 1954, the contest, co-sponsored by Seaview and the Norfolk Journal and Guide, drew a crowd of 3,500.
Wow.
So to keep this thing up, each year the Seaview was opened for summers, you know, like how Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, what we know, has like a grand opening every summer.
Yeah.
They would have something new. They would always add something new to it. So in 1946, they added, they did a $200,000 expansion.
Wow.
And they added a new restaurant and amusement rides and a Ferris wheel. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I'm just glad I kept as excited as I was about this place. I was like, where are the rides? And here they are. Here they are. Not something for everybody.
This one, okay. So in 1947, they added a $25,000 scooter car ride.
What?
And they added weekly fireworks.
Oh, wow. They were doing it up. This is,
I know.
Like, they are doing it up.
And a parking lot, so you can use your minister parking pass.
Oh, perfect. I'll just get my parking pass and my minister short shorts, and
yes,
I'll be there.
Yes.
Excuse me, I'm on official business to go swimming. Baptism.
So they also added a merry-go-round and sightseeing motorboats.
Wow.
I know.
In
1956, they upgraded the merry-go-round, and then they added a moon rocket ride.
Ooh, that sounds fast and fun.
Yeah, and bumper cars.
Oh, classic. Now it's a park. Like, once you get the bumper cars, it's like, okay, we
now
a park
it is now.
Now
I'm smelling that cotton candy. Okay, so this is fun. So, like at Joyland, how they had the Joyland Jazzers.
A band.
They didn't have... A little different than a band.
Oh.
They had Hop Along Bingo, a trained chimpanzee.
you know what? They got to compete out there, Aneke. There is many other attractions out there for your summer eyes and your summer entertainment. And you know what nobody else has? Hop Along Bingo with a Chimpanzee. Oh, man. Yeah. People love bingo.
No, Hop Along Bingo was the name of the trained chimpanzee.
Oh, I thought it was like bingo with the chimpanzee was like pulling the balls out or something.
Maybe. But the chimpanzee was Hop Along Bingo.
Oh, that's a clever name.
Is it?
No. What? And you know what? It's misleading because it would get, I'd see that in the paper and I'd be like, gotta get my car, my parking pass, and my short shorts and head on over and to play bingo. And I get there and there's no bingo, but I'm already there. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Well, what, now that you're already there watching Hop Along Bingo do whatever he was trained to do.
What was he doing? Calling bingo. Well, does not live up to his name.
You could also see a lot of traveling acts, like I said before. And this is the really cool thing. They had, they featured an interracial all-female jazz band.
Wow.
That's amazing on many levels.
That's like pre-Beyonce shit.
Exactly. Like, isn't that interesting? I want to know about this interracial all-female jazz band. Like, who are you?
Yeah, that's where you would have been, yes. Playing your oboe.
Oh, oboe's not the jazziest of instruments.
Well, you know what, Aneke, make room. Right. You can crack that glass ceiling for the oboe.
Innovation. Me and Hop Along Bingo can take this show on the road.
Take the scene. Aneke and Hop Along Bingo do the jazz and play bingo.
Okay, so basically the downfall of
damn it, I forgot.
I know. But it lasted a long time. It ended in the 1960s. So in the early 1960s, desegregation rules led to opening all of the beaches for all races. So making separate beaches kind of unnecessary. Because of that, people started just going wherever they wanted. And it wasn't like the concentration that, you know, in this one area. They could go to the white beaches as well. So
they were over Hop Along Bingo. Yeah. They're like, what these white people got?
So slowly it just kind of went down, and by 1964 it was shut down, and then it was demolished in 1966.
And turned into a parking lot?
No, it's condominiums.
Okay. Okay. And no, if you were living there, yes. You were living on history where Hop Along Bingo used to reside.
If you live in the Seagate Colony condos, then you are in history right now.
Yeah, on top of like someone had fun, someone threw up, all of that, right? Where
I'm
you
sure
were.
A lot of shit went
think
down.
About that.
And there was even more in this article that I read from that I just didn't even have time to get into. This place had a lot of happening. There was like some criminal activity that was going on and some gambling.
Ooh,
like
see?
It needs to be a TV show.
Show.
It really does.
It needs to be a TV
really
series.
Does.
Yeah. See you at the Sea
View. See you at the Sea View.
On Netflix.
I would watch it like you don't know what. Okay. No. Last but not least.
You'd watch it like a Hop Along Bingo.
No, I would not watch it like a trained
himself.
Chimpanzee.
Excuse? I don't know. I'm trying to make it sick. Not everything I spew is ministerial gold. I am a minister and you will respect me. See this badge? You will respect this.
He is literally showing me the badge.
Yeah, I'm not showing you the badge.
I'd be like, maybe how'd you get that? Where'd you get that from?
It could be a picture. Maybe I just have like a picture
but
of a
still,
vagina.
I would
and
ask,
just like,
where did you get that from?
You know what? Question still holds up.
Okay, I got one more park for you.
All right, take it
to
me.
Okay, now we're going to be talking about suburban gardens.
Oh, okay. This sounds a little bit more relaxing and suburbia.
Yeah, so Suburban Gardens was it was opened in 1921 in Washington, D.C. by a black-owned real estate concern called the Universal Development and Loan Corporation.
I just want to pause right there. I love that there is in the 1920s, like a black real
exactly.
estate company.
Right?
That's
isn't
great.
That cool? I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the owners of the real estate company titled Universal Development and Loan Corporation, or company, CO, I don't know. So were H.D. Woodson and John Painter, whose ancestors were slaves who attempted to escape. A little interesting tidbit for you. Okay.
That also just goes to show of like what a stone's throw away that slavery was still.
Exactly.
You know?
Hella close. Okay, so the city already had, Washington, D.C. already had several black-owned pleasure gardens, which sounds so gross, and I'm so glad we don't call them that anymore.
I'm coming out and saying this. I still go to a pleasure garden or two. That's what I call Central Park. I was in a pleasure garden this... I did a wedding in a pleasure garden this past weekend doing my ministerial duties. That was the pleasure garden.
So these pleasure gardens included merry-go-rounds, dance pavilions, food stands, and picnic areas. A lot like Central Park, actually.
Hence it being a pleasure garden.
No, you weren't.
I was lying.
So suburban gardens actually was way, had much more. It was basically for only black people in Washington, D.C., and it was 7 acres of land that had over a mile of, I don't know, you know, okay, so this guy named William H. Jones wrote this book called Recreation and Amusement Among Negroes in Washington, D.C., and I was going to read his quote just plain, but I feel like the way that these words are, I need to read them like how he would.
Yeah, let's hear it. Put some stank on it.
7 acres of land and is equipped with over a mile of macadam roadway, together with over 20 concessionaries, booths, and pavilions. In addition to a large dancing pavilion, there's a caterpillar, a coaster, and an aerial swing, a Ferris wheel and a doggum, a frolic, a tumblebug, and a fully equipped children's playground. Was that good? 1920s?
I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. You took me there. I wasn't ready. Where did I go? Oh my God. Miss Frizzle just transported me back there. That has so much stuff. I can bring my nickels. I'll bring my nickels, mister.
Yeah, you're going to need your nickels because I don't know what the fuck a macadam roadway is.
Yeah, you have me at the macadam roadway.
Macadam
maybe it's
roadway.
Like one of those like little like, is... it's like maybe the race cars or something little
yeah maybe okay. What's a dogum?
Oh, you know,
dogum, an aerio swing.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I had no idea. Yeah,
no,
are those separate things?
A tumble bug. Do you know what a tumble bug is?
Back in the day we used to tumble bug so much they had to outlaw them because so many kids would get hurt on the tumble bug. My mom was like, you can't go on that tumble bug. I'd do it anyways.
Rebel. Okay, so some of the buildings were designed by this noted black architect, Lewis Giles Sr., Howard University swim coach Clarence Pendleton Sr. oversaw the aquatics program. So I'm bringing that up because I just want to point out that, what, like I said at the start of this segment, when black people are in charge, they will hire more black people to come and work and actually do amazing things. The Dance Pavilion hosted performances of Duke Ellington and Cab Calloway. Wow. Yeah, it was great. So basically, suburban gardens closed in the 1940s, sadly.
So it went from like the 20s to the 40s.
Yeah, 1921 to the 40s, which is a good run.
Not too bad. But also, you know, I think, well, no, I was trying to think, we weren't involved in World War II. It's like maybe the war kind of killed it. But I mean, it would have been hard to survive during the war.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And if you notice, the last
other part
one,
started after the war.
Or right as the war was ending, 1944.
Okay,
so
yeah.
The war was starting to wind down.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so suburban gardens was, after it was closed, it was redeveloped and turned into apartment buildings.
Damn, all these parts. You know what? This happens way too often. I'm putting this out on. You pinched this out of me.
Yeah.
We used to go to.
Okay, yeah. I pinched it out.
When I was a kid, it just reminded me. Yeah. When I was a kid, we used to go to Manteca water slides all the time.
Oh, yeah. I remember Manteca.
Oh, it was one of the best. It was one of the best like waterside parks of. It was so great. So amazing.
Oh, wow.
And then I tried to go back at some point. I think I graduated after college. college, and me and my friend Tim were gonna go, and my dad's like, it's condos now. And I was
devastated. So
like, it kind of sucks. It's like, there's enough places to build land to go fucking live. Like, it's important for us to have these recreational things. Get out of the house.
It's so true.
Get your bingo
monkey. Raging Waters is still around.
Yeah. But
that's sad about Manteca.
Nothing like Manteca.
To go to Manteca too.
Because they had like this area. One thing I don't like about Watersides is you go on one side and have to wait in a long ass line.
Right.
But Manteca Watersides had this area where it was like 12 waters. You got to go in for like groups of people on different colored mats got to go in for like 30 minutes and just ride all the slides as they possibly could. And so you didn't have like a long lot. You're always wet. You know, no time to get dry. You were just
That's
wet.
The best. See, I miss a water park. Water parks were fun.
Yeah.
They're gross when you're an adult and you really think about it. But then you just got to put it out of your mind and realize chlorine does the trick.
Yep. And you just got to go when it's only adults there, which also gets nasty for a different reason.
See, I know.
they have circuit parties at like the circuit party will rent out an amusement park.
I mean, not an amusement park.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean an amusement park. I meant a water slide park.
Wow.
And so you've got like oomph, and it's like dark and, you know,
milky water. No thanks.
Chlorine does the trick.
All right. I'll give you that.
Let them have their pleasure garden.
I know.
That's a pleasure garden.
Well, that concludes our little trip down memory lane of Black-owned amusement parks of the past. So for all of you people who are thinking about possibly excited by creating an amusement park, do it. Don't let your dream pass you by. Just go and fulfill it. Go create that amusement park and we'll all enjoy it later on.
The world needs more amusement parks.
It's a good way to end this.
Who do you think's hotter, Captain America or Juggernaut?
If my boyfriend won't watch Handmaid's Tale with me, should I break up with him?
Is this meme already dead?
What exactly are furries?
I need a new four quadrant song. Any suggestions?
For answers to these questions and so much more, come on over to Pop Rocket, a pop culture roundtable show with me, Guy Branum.
Winter Mitchell,
Margaret Wappler,
and Karen Tongson.
Catch us every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you decide to get your podcasts. I'm not going to judge.
Stop gaslighting me. Ugh, I'm over it. No, not you. Just in general. So, Nick, I wanted to talk about in a little James's tidbits. James's nickel tidbits. I wanted to take a moment and talk about gaslighting because it's something that I have heard. And it's one of those phrases that has been used a lot lately. And I didn't really fully understand it or really think that it was applying to me until I felt it actually happening. I was like, oh my God, I'm being gaslit right now.
Tell me.
And I feel like those of us in marginalized groups, we can be very sensitive and we are very prone to gaslighting. And I think it's important to talk about and identify what gaslighting is, especially underneath this administration, which is really good at gaslighting. And as we're moving into, we got 2018 midterm elections, we kind of need to just kind of be aware of this. And I first felt that my gaslighting was happening when so Samantha Bee had made a comment about Ivanka Trump, and she called her a feckless C word. And Megyn Kelly equated it to what Roseanne Barr said. And I felt myself and I felt myself and getting upset, and I could feel the anger coming up in me, and I was like, oh, this is that. Yes. Like, I feel like I'm being purposely sort of triggered and distracted from, like, it's all these sort of culture politics that are become just sort of distractions from, like, what's really happening. So I was like, oh, I'm being gaslit. I fully understood what was happening. So I Googled gaslight. I went to Psychology Today.
Okay.
And
which I'm a little iffy on.
Oh, really?
We'll get into it later, but I want to. But well, they have good articles, too, though.
Exactly. I'm iffy on anything that's psychology because, and again, I'm a champion of therapists, therapy. But again, psychology has been used to, you can use psychology for many, many a thing. But what I liked about this is just it was just talking about what gaslighting is and a few ways to know that if you're being gaslit. So I want to give you just some helpful tips on things to be aware of in terms of gaslighting. And gaslighting,
this is going to be good.
If you don't know, it's a tactic in which a person or entity uses in order to gain more power makes a victim question their reality. Not only do I think the current administration use this tactic, but there might even be people in your life who are manipulating and gaslighting your life. So
I've been gaslit so many times. I mean, half the time I don't think people even know that they're gaslighting. It's like using position of power and shit. It's ridiculous.
Well, here's the first one that they do for gaslighting. They tell blatant lies. Because they start to set up a precedent, and they keep doing it so much that it keeps you unsteady and off kilter, and off kilter, which is your goal. So they will tell us just sort of blatant lies, and it becomes just such the pattern that you're just like, I don't even know what reality is anymore.
Oh shit! Which, yeah.
Look at, like, every time you're reading the newspaper now, you're just, or the blogs, or the nickel papers that I sell on the street corners.
Yes, that is like that's number one. It's so true. Where it's just about making you question everything, like,
yes, to the point where, like, the point where we're having to talk about what real news is,
right?
Like, it's, wait, what, why is this the conversation?
I hate it.
They're literally, Fox News has advertisements which, like, question your, like, they have a billboard running on the buses in, like, Harlem and Manhattan and, like, New York, mm-hmm. and it's like real news, and it's like five white people, like,
come
know
on.
Your market, that was wasted money. So anyways, number two, they deny they ever said something, even though you have proof. This administration does this so many times, you know,
all the time.
Pussygate, all that stuff, like, and just retracts, like, we have proof. And it makes you feel crazy because you're like, no, I know that you said this.
Yeah, exactly.
And the more that they do this, the more that you question your reality and start accepting theirs. And I think there's other people who are not even, who might even be on the middle of the line. These lies just get so spread so much, they're just like, okay, well, I guess this is the truth now.
Ugh, not good.
This one is, okay, they use what is near and dear to you as ammunition. So they know how important your identity is to you.
Right.
And I think that this gets used a lot. I think a lot of the culture politics that gets thrown into, and I didn't like that word before, but I have to just sort of be like, oh, that is what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're using identity politics, our identities, against us because we're fighting so much to be visible and equal.
Right.
And it's literally being used to divide us and as a weakening point for us, or even to get us angry. Because when we're angry, we're distracted from getting any real work done or being able to have any real conversations as well.
Right. Amen.
So they literally are just attacking you for your foundation of your being. And it sucks. It puts you off kilter. And you're just like, it's just like it's getting hit in the stomach and you can't get your balance.
Yuck.
They wear you down over time. It's that frog in the frying pan analogy.
Yep. Lobster in boiling water.
Yep. Their actions do not match their words.
Yeah.
They'll also throw in positive reinforcement to confuse you. So you're kind of just like, oh, well, maybe they aren't so bad. And I know, like, as I'm always just trying to, like, be the empathetic person and trying to just eventually. And, like, someone will just say something kind of nice, like, oh, maybe Trump's not that bad. But, like, you know, like, also hard because you do want to bridge that gap. We do want to eventually, like, you know, kumbaya and have love.
Right.
But what were you going to say?
Well, I was just also saying, like, this real sinister part of it is a lot of this stuff happens in toxic relationships. And, like, Trump is, like, and the administration right now is excellent source to kind of bring it to the forefront because they're doing it so blatantly. Like, everything you're saying is, like, by the rule book of gaslighting. They are doing it tick by tick. You can count it off. But, like you said, with, like, the frog in the frying pan and, like, lobster in boiling water, it's harder when it's someone that you love, that you're in a closer relationship with, that you are a loved one. But this is where a lot of it stems out of, is close personal relationships. You'd be surprised how often, I mean, at work, not at my current job, but at jobs I've had in the past, I've been gaslit. With other relationships that I've had in the past, I've been gaslit. It's it's a tactic that is used a lot more often than people realize.
Well, and that's what this article was actually been talking about. It was literally, it's part in the opening. They're like, this is a tactic that's used more often than you realize.
Yeah.
And on this specific note, you know, they say, be careful, be mindful what it is that you're being praised for.
Mm.
It's probably oftentimes something that serves the gaslighter.
Ooh.
And I can even look at this for, like, you know, model minority type behavior,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's to serve a certain message or agenda for them.
Like being told, like if you're a black woman, your hair is straightened and somebody's like, oh, your hair looks so pretty today. That's...
Yes, right. yeah. Oh, I'm trying to praise you for this thing that I want you to be more like this. Ooh, this one. They know confusion weakens people.
Mm.
And... we are just confused as fuck all the time because we're just like, what the fuck is going on? What is reality? There's just so much confusion that's happening. They project. And this is done so often that you're trying to defend yourself, that you're distracted from the gaslighter's own behavior. So this is a great thing as well, because an example, I mean, Trump put out this huge tweet about, you know, he was so offended that, you know, Samantha Bee used the C word about his daughter. He has said and done work. Like, really? You're offended by that? Like,
He's literally said he'd grab a pussy. Like, what?
I'm getting upset. I'm getting gaslit, and like I am not benefiting from getting gaslit right now, and getting all.
No.
And so I can feel it. I literally felt it just now, and I just took a breath, and I'm like, okay, not gonna go there because you're just
That's
trying
good.
To get me there. You're trying
That's
to get me there.
That's good tactic right there that
well,
you did.
I'll give you some tactics in just a moment. They try to align people against you. They'll put different sides against each other. They'll tell others that you are crazy.
Yeah, that's a big one.
The gaslighter knows if they question your sanity, people will not believe you when you tell them that the gaslighter is abusive or out of control.
Mm.
And the last one, they'll tell you that everyone else is a liar. So, I mean, we get told how much the rest of the media is such. And I was talking to a journalist at the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've always kind of side-eyed journalism, but not into the degree when we're calling it fake news. Like, there's always...
Yeah, you can't do that.
There's always...
And it's so self-serving.
Yeah. And so we just have to be mindful of, like, I mean, there's damn near, like, state-run television now with, like, Fox News, where, like, these people are, like, sitting in on, like, meetings and being funneled to told what to say. And... so I wanted to just give you a few tips and techniques of like just real quick of that I found helpful for myself when I realized this was happening. And it's interesting, like I discovered gaslighting through Meghan McCain. And
interesting.
Which is really interesting because, you know, I love The View. I love hearing those ladies talk about, I love it. I love little View clips. And here's the thing. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of the things that Meghan McCain says or does, but I also think it's, what I like is that she's someone that I don't necessarily always agree with, but I can still listen to her. And
That's
I do
good.
Think it's important for us to still be able to listen to people
we
don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if it was all liberals and Democrats, I don't think that's the, I don't want to live in that world. I want to have that balance so we can have that discourse,
yes,
you know.
I hear you.
And I think it's okay for us to, I think we've gotten fooled that we have to agree all the time, and that's not the case. That's never going to happen.
Mm.
And we benefit from being challenged. It you know, metal sharpens metal. And so it's important to have that. We just need to be able to have actual dialogue and to be able to connect with each other.
Yes.
So for myself, I said I know your triggers and heal them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to know what sets you off, and so that way you can be aware of it. And I think sometimes we can almost wear our triggers too much as this doesn't apply to everything. So, you know, but sometimes we can wear them so much as like a badge. Mm-hmm. And then like if you're wounded, you treat it.
Mm.
Otherwise you'll die.
That's good.
Right?
Yeah,
like
if
I get stabbed in the arm, mm-hmm. I'm not just going to walk around and you bump me in the arm and I'm like, Aneke, you bumped my arm. Well, why wasn't I treating it? Why wasn't I, you know, I can't be that mad at you. I wasn't treating my wound, you know?
Yeah.
I think we can't let our wounds define us because otherwise they're going to kill us because that's what they are. So, and they're being used, our wounds are being used against us. So it's important to take the time to heal those wounds.
Mm.
Breathe, take breaths for when you feel it. You can feel it. Like just now when I was talking about Trump, I could feel myself. I can feel the anger rising up and I took a breath and I paused back down.
So smart.
So be aware that it's happening.
Yes.
Especially because, again, like they said,
excellent.
They're trying to get you all riled up. I also think about this. It's also important, and we talk about this a lot in the show, and I just want to remind, finding positive news, it's out there.
Oh, yeah.
There are great, amazing things that are happening out there. I was at a friend's house the other day, and we were watching Westworld, and the news came on, and it was just like bombardment of like, this woman died in an ocean, and guess who's getting shot over here? And I was like, oh,
it's
my
so
God.
True.
What?
Yeah, like, remove yourself. Like, it's good to ingest that stuff, but after a while, you got to take a breather. Like, I go on Twitter, and everybody's so negative on Twitter that, like, I have to get off and find something positive. Like,
yeah.
The world will seem like it is doom and gloom if you let the news cycle dictate what you are reading.
And that's what they want, because they'll keep you glued in. It's part of the tactics, and it sells papers. I should know. I used to sell papers, and when I was like, puppy wins award on the front page, it never sold. But when I was like, woman gets hit by a truck and eaten by a bear, sold off. Okay. So also, like, notice what's not being reported. When there's a huge, when Trump is tweeting out about Roseanne, something else is happening.
Yeah,
what else is not? You know, look, and what else? It's smoke and mirrors. It's smoke and mirrors tactics. And also, I just encourage people to continue to getting involved in your own communities, volunteer, donate. Yes. We have to stop waiting for Superman to come and save us, because he's not coming. He's not real. We have to be the hero that you wish existed. It's on us to do it.
I love that. I love that notion of going into your community. Like, we think on such like a macro stance, like, North Korea, China, Russia, like all those things are happening. But also, you know what else is happening? Your local community. Mm-hmm. Kids are going to school in your local community. People, there's homeless shelters in your local community. People need to be fed. There is like how you went and worked at an LGBTQ youth homeless center. Like, there, when you look on the more micro aspect, you can start to see the humanity and actually feel the effect of change a lot more. I mean, even just going to your neighbor, and I mean, I'm guilty of this. Like, I haven't gone and talked to my neighbor, but if you get to know the people who are surrounding you, the world gets more, it becomes a less bigger place and more, intimate.
Yeah. And it becomes,
and you have more connection
and
to
less
it.
Scary, because if you're just looking at, man, if you're just looking at this, and again, like, it's these purpose, they're very good at gaslighting, and gaslighting is meant to create fear, and it weakens you. And but whereas, again, love and connection, we're hardwired for connection. Human beings are hardwired to connect with other human beings.
Yeah, we're tribal.
And love is this thing that we can share with each other. And so, yeah, like, going out into your, like, and I, for myself, like, made a commitment that I'm going to volunteer just like once a month to a call, like, just
excellent
3 hours. Like, I'm like, okay. And sometimes it just takes like the moment to like research it. Like, a lot of times we just don't know where or how. So it's like, Google a topic. If you're like animals, or if there's a cause, like, there's someone that could use your time or your money or something. And
that's so nice. I love that.
The last thing I wanted to say that has been really helpful for myself. This came from, I was listening to the Lewis Howes School of Greatness, and Chris Lee, who is a motivational life coach and has some great books out there, he has this mantra that has been very useful to me. Be the king or queen of neutral.
Oh.
You know, when you feel yourself getting all excited about something, I just say, I am the king of neutral. I say it to myself, and it works. Mm. The problem is, we hardwire ourselves. Our brain synapses get faster and faster and faster. Mm. So myself, I'm so used to reacting to news that I don't like. Mm. So I read something, I can already, boom, right? And
it
just gets faster and faster. And so I just need to, like, we give so much meaning to everything, and not everything needs all that meaning and all that time and attention and effort. And that's why you get exhausted. That's why you get burnt out or discouraged or so angry about stuff, because, like, we're so, everything means everything. So I've just been kind of saying, I'm the king
of
neutral.
You know what? Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, I'm done.
It brings that last part. I realized that I've been doing it in a different way, because I'm a very anxious person. And in fact, I'm undiagnosed.
Yeah, me too.
But I know that I definitely suffer from anxiety, and I have like panic attacks from time to time. But I think of it as like what brings, what grounds me, what brings me back to zero. What brings me from that heightened sense or from that deep low sense. So baseball.
Yeah.
And I pick an activity sometimes what I do. If I feel like the news is getting too much, or if I feel like somebody is gaslighting me in my own personal interaction, I will remove myself. That's one way that I leave the room. I politely excuse myself. I go somewhere else so I can reconnect with myself. If it's like social media or news, I will have an activity. And for me, it's crafting. So I crochet now.
Yeah.
Like, I will, because crocheting brings me back down to who I am.
Right. Yes. And it just reminds me, because, like, I mean, you're not reactive when you're crocheting. You just can't, you can't be. You're just not going to be. And we've gotten, we've just gotten so reactive. And they're banking on that. And especially as we start coming around to the 2018 elections, heal up them triggers, because your identity is going to be used against you. And you can't, if you own it and you heal it and you're aware of it, then they can't. And we can do the actual work that
needs
to be done.
And also, just as like a disclaimer, healing a trigger isn't like what I know what you're saying. And I just want to emphasize to people that it's a lifelong journey. So it isn't like...
Sure, absolutely. I just want to... It's more so I just want to encourage... I feel like I've seen people just kind of rest in it. And, you know, and I think we just kind
of
have
to
be...
Do the work
to
make you feel good. It's time to... better, to connect with yourself.
It's time to be adults here and put on our big people pants and again, do the work, and it's on your own sort of time and level. But I think I'm going to put a little tough love in here and encourage you to push forward, because it's your life and you deserve to be happy. And these triggers and wounds are only holding you back. And again, every situation, it's not a blanket that goes over every situation, but I think... You know what? If you're listening to this, you know what I'm talking about. And if you're getting triggered by it, well,
it's just
let's heal
take
that.
Yourself with care too. Try, and by taking yourself with care, meaning you go to the doctor, you take your vitamins, you do your exercise, you work on yourself. You don't just say, "I wish I could go to the doctor," or that's a bad example. I wish I could go outside for a fresh breath of air. Go outside for a fresh breath of air. Like,
you do it. You do it. Yeah, you take care of yourself. It's the same way, like I said this earlier, if you stab me, I don't just walk around with that wound. I heal it. So there you go. There you go. You've got your first aid kit for gaslighters.
Just pop
that
it in the
call
trunk
it?
Of your car for a rainy day.
Don't gaslight me. I got you. Here we are at the end of the road.
It's the end.
I always want to sing Boys and Men. Oh, sidebar.
Yeah.
Go Google Widows when we're done and watch that trailer.
Oh, I've been wanting to. Viola Davis.
Viola Davis, directed Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes.
Also, Cynthia Nerivo, she won the Tony for The Color Purple. I saw her the day before she won it.
She's an up-and-upper in the movie world.
Yes. I looked at another article, and there her name was. She just signed on to something else. Directed by Steve McQueen.
Ooh. 12 Years a Slave.
Yes. And it's like a new Set It Off.
I am down.
Yeah.
And
I'm
you know what?
This is great.
Steve McQueen did that one movie with Michael Fassbender where he played, like, it was really depressing, but you got to see his ding dong in it. So Steve McQueen might be.
Aneke's interest
is
peaked.
He's not afraid to go there. So.
Oh, yeah. Aneke wants to see some dong. Two things that Aneke wants in a movie: some female bank robbers and dong. So she's got her ticket booked and ready. November, here she come.
It's the truth. Okay, so speaking of tickets, which has nothing to do with anything, I got a tweet of the week.
Tweet of the week. Get your tickets.
Okay, now I wanted to read this tweet because, one, this listener is not only giving a shout out to other podcasts, which I'm about to give a shout out to, it's doing that thing that I really like.
Okay, I wasn't sure where this is going. It was very
where
intense.
Where they are referring our podcast to other people.
Oh, I love that too.
So this is, so the first tweet, not from our listener, goes, "Hi friends, I'm writing an article about podcasts that are both geeky and queer or queer friendly. What are your favorites?" And then at True Andrew wrote, "These geek folks, Minority Corner, Queery Cast, Tom Foolery, playing the X-Men, and Pop Rocket, always make my rotation to scratch that geek culture itch." So I want to thank you, True Andrew, for promoting us, talking about us, enjoying our listening. We appreciate you.
Yeah. And shout out to fellow Max Fun show, Pop Rocket.
Yeah.
Pop Rocket. I wish that was their theme song, but
you know what? Maybe you can reach out to them.
I'm just me singing it. Pop Rocket. And that's it. We also got a review of the week over on, I don't think they call it iTunes, Apple Podcasts, they call it now. I can't keep up.
I can't Kids either. It's like Diddy. Too many names.
Yeah. What's your name? Okay. Mm-hmm. So this one from Kristen is my name.
Okay. Thanks.
Or Kirsten is my name. I always get confused. I wrote, "The last couple episodes have really killed it."
Yeah.
Oh, that warms our heart. "The one released on May 11th, especially.
What are we talking
James
about?
And Neke are hilarious and have a strong message of love and acceptance while also being able to side-eye your faves."
Yep.
"Also, that one girl fight scene in Infinity War was garbage." And I'm glad they said so. "We call it out. We call it like we see it.
We side-eye it." Oh, thank you for the review.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was
and,
thanking her.
Oh. I was thanking her too.
Oh.
You know what it was? I was distracted. I wasn't very present when I was responding, so that was my fault. I'm sorry. I was multitasking. And multitasking
is
a myth.
Let it lie.
Okay. Well, get involved in the conversation. We're on all these different social media channels. You can find us, write a review, share us out. Also, I forgot to mention this. I am curious if you know of other positive news sources or channels, share them in the Corner Kids, our Facebook group, the Corner Kids Playground, or tweet them at us. Because I don't know of specifically news that only handles positive stuff, because I would like to circulate more of that
around. Let us know with that. That would be really interesting. And I'm glad that you shouted out the Corner Kids Playground, because I did notice that there were some conversations that started from our last podcast with members of the group who do identify as non-binary, addressing the question, too, that we posed last time.
Awesome. Yes. So great conversations are happening. And I guess this week's question is, what are positive news sources?
Yeah.
Let us know. We want to know.
Great. Well, we're on Facebook, Minority Corner, spelled with a K. You can email us and ask Minority Corner anything at minoritycornerwithak@gmail.com.
And that's the show. Thank you, Woody, for editing, and thank you to Brownout for our music, and thank you to all of you for listening to Minority Corner.
We're the majority.
We're the majority.
When we're together, we're definitely going to sync that one up.
Oh, we're going to sync that hardcore.
The whole podcast is just going to be
synced. In sync, yeah. Get ready. It's coming at ya.
Yeah. Cleopatra. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.